Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to? All on that day.
Hello and welcome to The Breakdown, brought to you by The Nation Magazine and TheNation.com. I'm Chris Hayes, Washington editor of The Nation. Each week here on The Breakdown, we take your questions via Twitter at Chris L. Hayes or via email at TheBreakdown@TheNation.com. The way it works is this. You send us questions about what's perplexing you this week in Washington, and we try to break it down.
Will I run to the rock? Please hide me, I run to the rock. Please hide me, I run to the rock.
Hello, welcome back to The Breakdown, week 23, episode 23 in the Collector series. This week's question comes from Randall Jones, who emails to ask, how did the National Rifle Association, the NRA, become so incredibly powerful and guns come to be regarded as a public good? I have with me to answer that question, I think it's a very relevant question in the wake of the McDonald decision before the Supreme Court, which basically says that localities can put hardly any restrictions on what kind of guns citizens can own. I have with me to answer that question Robert Spitzer. He's a distinguished service professor of political science at the State University of New York in Cortland. He specializes in the issue of gun control as author of the book The Politics of Gun Control. Professor Spitzer, thanks so much for joining me.
Chris, it's good to be with you.
So maybe the way to start answering this question is to maybe trace the history of the NRA. I mean, where does the NRA come from, and when did it start, and why did it start?
Well, the NRA is a very old group. It was formed in 1871. It was formed as an organization to help American men improve their marksmanship and shooting skills. One of the ironies about the NRA is that its very existence is owed to the fact that the typical American man did not know one end of a gun from another. And the reason we knew that was because of the Civil War. Millions of men were impressed into military service in the North and the South, and most did not know about guns, about the use of guns, the care of guns. And to remedy that situation for future wars, the NRA was formed by two Civil War veterans who also happened to be from New York State. And the NRA was basically a marksmanship, target shooting, gun practice organization for decades. It was not very large. It nearly went out of existence in the early 1900s, but thanks to a helping hand from the federal government, another irony about the NRA, it survived and continued to gradually accumulate members, especially after there were wars, because more men became acquainted with guns during wartime. And some of the men wanted to retain that activity after completing the military service. And the NRA began to become involved in politics in the 1930s as the first modern gun control laws were enacted. But it was really in the 1970s when the NRA became very much more political and also much more hard right. It became much more staunchly anti-gun control. And in fact, before the mid-1970s, the NRA actually participated in helping write gun laws, including the strict Washington, D.C. gun law that was challenged successfully in 2008 in the Heller Supreme Court case.
That is fascinating. What accounts for the kind of politicization or turn towards this kind of extremely no-compromise, zealous form of political advocacy and lobbying?
Well, it becomes the red meat of an organization like the NRA. The NRA traditionally is fairly conservative. But starting from, actually, you can date it to 1977, which was the year that the NRA held its annual convention when a very hard right group won control of the organization and never let go. And essentially what happens with a group like the NRA is that they need a steady diet of extremism and vehement rhetoric, because that's how they mobilize and expand their base. That's how they get people to participate, to contribute money, to write letters, to do all of the active things that really make a difference in American politics. And even though the NRA is not really a very large group, given the size of American society, I mean, even today the NRA has a little over 4 million members, which is a good number, but it certainly does not put them at the top of, you know, the largest membership groups in America. It's a 4 million that has a very, very strong feelings about guns, about gun rights, about the mythology of guns, about the so-called gun culture. And the NRA leadership has become very adept at feeding its membership and trying to grow its membership by emphasizing threats from the outside, the threat that your guns are going to be taken away, the threats that your liberties are at risk, the threats that black helicopters are coming to spy on you, and a whole series of other things. It becomes ever more extreme, and it feeds the base, but it also pushes them ever further to the extreme.
So you point out they only have four million members is a massive membership organization, but there is, it seems to me, and I think the question suggests this, that it's remarkable to see how much influence and power they have on Capitol Hill in Washington. What makes the NRA so effective? How is it that they're able to leverage these 4 million people to essentially dominate completely the entirety of the national gun agenda?
Well, they do it through basically a two-pronged effort. One is that they are extremely adept and skilled at the lobbying game in the halls of Congress and in Washington, D.C., generally. Many groups engage in lobbying activities, of course, but they're very, very good at it. They've been at it for many decades. It is, again, a very old group. But the other thing is that they have a real grassroots base, not an astroturf grassroots base, if you will. And their members will really come to the barricades, politically speaking, and perhaps sometimes even more than that. And members of Congress will feel their pressure. They will turn out at meetings. They'll write letters. They'll really exert, a great deal of pressure. And I would add that in the last decade to decade and a half, the NRA has also benefited from two other things going on. One is that they've mounted a very successful political effort to advance their issues, and also a legal effort that was very much constructed and by design, that culminated in the Heller Supreme Court case from 2 years ago and the McDonald case just this past week. And the political effort really began around the 2000 elections. The Democrats and Al Gore ran on gun control issues, but Gore lost the election, and that spooked the Democrats. And even though my analysis suggests that the NRA, didn't really change outcomes significantly, the Democrats came away from 2000 elections believing that the gun issue really hurt them. And they've been backtracking from the issue pretty much since then. Then you had the election of George Bush, the most pro-gun president in American history. And now you have President Obama, who, similar to other Democrats, has decided that the gun issue is really not a priority and that it is too much of a hassle to try and deal with. And the other element is the legal side. The NRA and similar gun rights organizations have poured millions of dollars into cultivating a narrative about the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms, which says that it's an individual right. And even though the history is poor, to say the least, they have culminated that decades-long effort in the two Supreme Court cases that we have that came from five conservative justices. And so here we are.
What's remarkable to see, having sort of won so resoundingly in Congress, and I think in sort of presidential politics, to see them move to the court, you wonder now they've won there, what the NRA is next for them, although I guess there's now a ton of local gun laws for them to go about challenging, and I imagine that'll be the agenda. Robert Spitzer, Distinguished Service Professor of Political Science, State University of New York in Cortland, thanks so much for coming on The Breakdown.
It's good to speak with you.
The Breakdown is a weekly production of The Nation Magazine and TheNation.com. New audio casts are posted each Friday at TheNation.com and available on iTunes. The Breakdown was produced by Eric Dang and yours truly. Senior producers of The Nation are Emily Douglas and Ben Mosquita. Comments and feedback should be sent to TheBreakdown at TheNation.com.
Oh, Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to? All on that day.